I'll share again the same reading from the Message Bible. Soon another feast came around, and Jesus was back in Jerusalem. Near the sheep gate in Jerusalem, there was a pool, in Hebrew called Bethesda, with five alcoves. Hundreds of sick people, blind, crippled, paralyzed, were in these alcoves. One man had been an invalid there for 38 years. When Jesus saw him stretched out by the pool and knew how long he had been there, he said, "Do you want to get well?" The sick man said, "Sir, when the water is stirred, I don't have anybody to put me in the pool. By the time I get there, somebody else is already in." Jesus said, "Get up, take your bedroll, start walking." The man was healed on the spot. He picked up his bedroll and walked off. Today's message, we're going to start a series on healing. Today we'll talk about the healing of the body, and then we'll move on to the healing of relationships, the healing of courage, and the healing of faith. With regard to this story, it's important to understand a little bit of the perspective of the people that were there at the pool. The understanding at the time was that periodically and through no predictable manner, angels would descend upon this pool, and they would stir the water. When the angel stirred the water, the earliest to the pool would be healed of their ailments. So in effect, it was kind of God's amazing race. The chance to get to the pool first and to heal the maladies and ailments that you've been suffering through your life and move on with a healthy life from that point forward. However, as the passage tells us, there were hundreds of people in these various alcoves. So there was no way that all of them could be cured with a single event. There were those that were so ill, so infirm, they couldn't move and had no one there to help them or aid them. So we'll get to this in a minute, but this is why it's important to focus on why this situation, why is this being called out as being important for us to understand. Let's start with the principle of a duty to care. Duty to care is a specific tort law obligation in today's world. And basically it asks that we adhere to a reasonable standard of care when action could cause harm. What you do could cause more harm than good, but because we have a particular knowledge or a particular process that we understand, we're expected to fulfill that support and that care. Proverbs 15:4 says, kind words heal and help. Cutting words wound and maim. More tangibly, those of us who have had children understand that there are times when actions could be helpful but could also produce some form of harm. Roughhousing with your child, wrestling on a couch, you're having fun, you're lifting spirits, you're making them better, and all of a sudden you hear the snap or the pop of a joint pulling out or something going the wrong way, and harm's been caused. The duty of care is a social contract between us as people. An emergency medical technician who passes by a car accident is expected to provide care. They have been trained in certain medical procedures and are expected to use that training to the betterment of people that they pass by, even if it's not in their town, even if it's not their jurisdiction. And as long as they adhere to the standard of care that they have been trained to do, then they're considered to be fine in the eyes of the law. So, what triggered the duty of care with Jesus in this particular moment? Well, I think there are three main factors that came into play here. The first was, how long had the suffering been going on? This is someone we're told was infirm for 38 years. I don't know about you, but I can't imagine going 38 years of being not just infirmed, but not having anybody there to provide love and support and help me through that process. So Jesus understood the suffering of this particular individual as being different from others who may have been hurt or ill or maimed, but might not have been suffering for that same duration. The second is, what is the desire of the person who is infirmed? In this particular case, Jesus needed to know that He was turning to somebody who wanted to be healed by Christ. It's not fair, it's not right to just heal people without knowing what their desire is and what their intent is. The last, and the fact that the passage in our Pew Bible specifically calls out that this healing took place on the Sabbath, is that that duty of care has to exceed all other rules. Remember, at this time, the Sabbath was a day of rest. Healing somebody was considered work. So therefore, you're violating the law of resting on the Sabbath by healing somebody. Today, we would look at each other and feel, that's kind of absurd. If somebody is in need of help and we see they're in immediate need of help and I can help them, I should help them. I really don't care what day it is. Well, part of that is the peace that Christ had to go through and decide at that moment in time. So what does Christ call us to do by sharing this story? Well, people in medicine provide comfort. There's no doubt about that. People who provide transportation for those in need of treatment also are fulfilling that duty of healing the body by supporting somebody getting to where they need to be. If we feed the hungry or we clothe the poor, are we not healing people with every step that we take? Absolutely. But I think there's a greater call in this story. The greatest call that I see is bringing others to Christ to ask for his healing when they need it and where they need it. Luke 10:8 says, "When you enter a town and are received, eat what they set before you, heal anyone who is sick, and tell them God's kingdom is right on your doorstep." Are you hurting? Pray. Do you feel great? Sing. Are you sick? Call the church leaders together to pray and anoint you with oil in the name of the Master. Believing prayer will heal you, and Jesus will put you on your feet. And if you've sinned, you will be forgiven, healed inside and out. From James 5, verse 13. I'm going to share some pieces of a story that were shared to me by Joanne, who's with us this morning. I share this with her permission. Joanne grew up in the Jehovah's Witness body of faith. No doubt a strong basis of faith, powerful basis of faith, with roots that will hold forever. The Jehovah's Witness denomination, as with all denominations, has certain things that are very strict, very well adhered to, and looked upon with certain ways of looking at the world. If we are to take any denomination as a Christ-led church, then it's not our place to judge any denomination and how they approach things. It is a descended upon belief based on study, based on review, based on prayerful consideration of the direction this world should travel. Now, with that said, individuals within any denomination can struggle and have challenges with that faith and how that faith approaches life around them. And it raises questions, and we are welcome and open to ask questions at any time about our faith and how we view things. Well, after a long time away, Joanne shared that she attended another church. In this particular church, she was eagerly accepted and welcomed. She openly volunteered her help and her support, particularly with the youth of the church, to bring a spirit of energy and vitality and life to that church through the gifts and talents that she was blessed with. She shared, as most of us would, more and more about herself as time moves forward. And she shared her business, the Willow Connection. That business leverages Reiki and aromatherapy as methods of healing. These are God-given resources. These are gifts blessed upon people based on what God has shared with them and through them. Unfortunately, this particular church decided to reject her for those acts. Not only to disapprove of what she was doing, but literally push her away. Push her away from working with children. Push her away from being comfortable and feeling like she was a part of this church and a part of Christchurch. Where is God in that story? What does a true Christ-led church do? Well, if we listen to the great commandment to love one another, we welcome and embrace someone who is listening to God's voice, who is discerning what that means for them in that time and place, and who is acting on a duty of care in the same way that Christ did at the pool. Someone who asks, "Do you want to get well?" And when the person says yes, they respond. It seems fairly basic, and we should all be more like that. We need to be aware of the gifts of healing that each of us have been given. And yes, each and every one of us have gifts of healing within us. No, we are not all trained doctors or surgeons. No, we are not all trained paramedics and emergency medical technicians, but each of us has an ability to heal and to help others heal their body in what we do every day. Comforting words. It is amazing what someone's mindset does for their body itself. We've seen it time and time again. How many people have you seen suffering through tremendous strain, through cancers, through afflictions that there just are no scientific answers for? And yet, if their spirit is one of energy and one of delight and one of, I'm going to get through this, they do. It happens. When we support that, we are leveraging our gifts of support through Christ to channel healing. The biggest thing, though, as I said before, is that that greatest call is to bring people to Christ in healing. All amazing things are done through God. And how can we turn our backs on someone when we know the power and the support and the love that's there is so important, is so critical to the healing of one's body? We need to risk sharing God's vision of how we are called to heal by bringing people closer to Christ. Eagerly and diligently, let's apply our gifts and talents to the healing of others. And we need to give as Jesus did, freely, openly, and without fear of what might be seen as right. Amen. Let's join together now in singing our communion hymn, "The Church's One Foundation." It's found printed on your bulletin. And will those who can do so comfortably please stand.